Sustainable Lens, Resilience on Radio. Hear an informed, intelligent and provocative discussion of sustainability issues every week. It's brought to you by Otago Polytechnic, where all students learn how to make their industries more sustainable. The regular panel of Samuel Mann and Shane Gallagher are hosted by Anton Angelo and joined every week by a leading figure in the sustainability scene. Politics, Science and Controversy on Sustainable Lens on Radio, tonight at 7 o'clock, and podcast on www.sustainablelens.org or www.oar.org.nz. Welcome to the Sustainable Lens on Radio Election Forums. We're very glad you've chosen to join us today, and we've invited the candidates for this year's election in the Dunedin South electorate to talk about issues around sustainability. Before we go on to introduce our guests, here's a bit of information about the electorate. The Dunedin South electorate incorporates the southern Dunedin city suburbs from Caversham to St Kilda, the Otago Peninsula and the communities of Green Island, Fairfield, Brighton and Mosgiel. Boundary changes in 2007 saw the electorate's boundaries extended south of the Tyree River, inland as far as the Lamellore Range and north along State Highway 87 through Middlemarch as far as Tiriti. Of those gainfully employed in 2006, which were the last census data available, Dunedin South had the second highest proportion of those working in the healthcare and social assistance industries, 12%. Of those, over 23,000 households in the electorate, 27% were in one-person households, the fifth highest proportion in New Zealand. So it's a big electorate. It encompasses the historically working-class roots of Dunedin, Nobbs Hill and St Clair, and the hippie hideaways of the peninsula and the rural aspect further down the coast. The candidates joining us today are the sitting Labour MP Claire Curran, Green candidate Shane Gallagher, New Zealand Democrats Warren Voigt and National Joanne Hayes. I'd like to introduce the other host, Sustainable Lens panellist Sam Mann, Associate Professor at the Otago Polytechnic. The agenda for this evening is set out like this. First, we'll have 5 minutes for each of the candidates to introduce themselves. Hopefully, that'll be the speechifying done, because we want to move to a premature discussion about the sustainability issues facing the electorate, the country, the world in general, and where our candidates stand on those. We're going to follow a few themes we think have been important. Then we'll have a short break and invite questions from the audience, as well as getting the reaction from those here in the audience at the Otago Polytechnic today, when ones we've been collecting from the guests on our show this year and from comments from our website, sustainablelens.org. I'd also like to take time to thank the Otago Polytechnic for their kind sponsorship of Sustainable Lens and, of course, Otago Access Radio 105.4 FM. Sam.
Thank you, Anton. I think we'll go straight into the introductions. I've asked each candidate to prepare an introduction. I've asked them to give us a bit about themselves, what they see as the sustainability challenges for Dunedin South, and what they plan to do to address them. We're going in alphabetical order for this first round. So first up, we have Claire Curran.
Hello, thank you. It's great to be here. I'm Claire Curran. I've been the member for Dunedin South for the Labour Party for the last 3 years. And it's been an interesting 3 years. I grew up in Dunedin. I moved away in my 20s and lived overseas for quite a bit of time. But I came back. And I came back because I had two children and I wanted them to grow up in New Zealand, and I wanted them to grow up in a community like Dunedin. I wanted them to go to high school, go to university possibly, but most of all, I want them to stay in New Zealand, to have a good job, to have opportunities, to realise their potential, and to have a good income. And look, I think that's the dream that every parent wants for their children, and I think going for us, you know, looking at this election, that there's a clear choice about the kind of direction that the country's going in, that people can make about whether they think that the major parties have the ability to ensure that in 10, 20 years' time that New Zealand will be a place where our kids do want want to stay and will have good jobs to go to. I'm an accidental politician in a sense. It was never part of my plan to be actually a politician. I've always worked inside or alongside politics, and I've always been political, and I'm driven by a desire to change the way that we do politics, to make politics more accessible to people, to make politicians more accessible. Programs like this are part of that, really. And for people to have the ability, more ability to influence the decisions that shape their lives. I think that New Zealand's future, Dunedin's future, depends on long-term sustainability, not just sustainability to do with the environment, but it's integral to our economy, our society, our culture, and our way of life. And in the last 3 years, what I've tried to do is draw attention to what needs to be done to ensure that Dunedin does have a sustainable future, that we have an economy that allows our kids to know that when they leave school that they've got jobs to go to, and also that our community has a strong voice. And I've worked quite hard on trying to build that voice, particularly in South Dunedin, which is the heart of the Dunedin South electorate. It's also one of the parts of New Zealand that has the highest population density and lowest income level per household. So there are a lot of issues there, but there are a number of environment issues that I'd like to touch on. And I believe, and I think Labor believes, that you can't have an attitude which is about balancing environmental and economic considerations, because that's like code for saying that economic considerations are more important. And we don't believe they are. We believe that they're both sides, different sides of the same coin. And if you damage the environment, then it will have an economic impact. We want to become a carbon neutral nation that takes full responsibility for its emissions and for its agricultural emissions, and government needs to lead by example. But looking at social sustainability, a decent job, enough to pay the bills, a decent house, a good health system, and a good education, it's not much to ask for, but governments do need to make important decisions about ensuring that those things are in place. And inequality is one of the most major issues that we're dealing with at this time, and it impacts in every way on our ability to be a sustainable nation. All our policies are geared towards reducing inequality and giving our young people better opportunities, and they're all well costed. So when you come to cast your vote on the 26th of November, you'll have three votes, one for the candidate, one for the party, and one for the political system that you want to keep in this country. I support MMP. I hope you'll vote Labor, because if you want to change the government, you need a Labor-led government.
Thank you very much, Claire. Shane.
Kia ora. My name is Shane Gallagher, and I'm the Green Party candidate for Dunedin South. I moved to New Zealand about 10 years ago, and I have an 11-year-old son who's a Kiwi, and he, apart from the fact that he's got blonde hair and green eyes, he's part Ngāti Porou, and so he's quite a typical Kiwi in that he's got this very mixed heritage, Scottish, Irish, English, and Maori heritage. One of the things I'm really concerned about, and our party is concerned about, is the levels of inequality. Dunedin South is one of the most deprived electorates in New Zealand. It has massive poverty. It has a very large proportion of the houses have only an income of less than $20,000 a year, and a large proportion of the houses are single occupiers. That's because of the demographics, and the demographics in South Dunedin are a real concern. We have a very transient population, and we also have a very elderly population. And nearly 60% of the people living in South Dunedin over the age of 15 years are in receipt of benefit of one kind or another. Poverty and inequality are a poison in our society. They have massive effects, and they need to be addressed. We can't have a sustainable economy, we can't have a sustainable community if our communities are divided through massive inequality. We're the seventh most unequal country in the world. And that hasn't happened by accident. That's been a set of policy choices by various governments since the 1980s. And we need to address that issue. So I'm glad that Labour have recognised it as an issue and are going to address it. And we would like to work with them on that. The Green Party has three key policy areas that we want to focus on in the election. And that's kids, rivers and jobs. There are 270,000 children living in poverty in New Zealand, and we want to lift 100,000 of them out of poverty over the next 3 years. Children in poverty cost us about $6 billion per year, and that's a conservative estimate. To take 100,000 children out of poverty would only cost us $360 million a year. I think that's a pretty good investment. We do it by extending the working for families to everyone on a low wage. We'd reintroduce education support for solo parents and beneficiaries, because people who have an education get out of poverty more quickly and their children do better in school and in life. We'd raise the minimum wage to $15 immediately, and I will put about, that would benefit about 275,000 people in New Zealand straight away. And we make sure that rental properties are warm and healthy for children. We've just come from a health forum, and we talked about how in New Zealand there are diseases of poverty, like rheumatic fever. And that's caused by poor housing. So if we can address the issues for poor housing by investing in insulation and building good housing for our children and for everyone, then we would address health issues, and we'd address inequality, and we would address poverty, and we'd create jobs. We want to have clean rivers. We want our children to be able to swim in rivers and our lakes. Over half of our monitored rivers are too dirty to swim in, and a third of our lakes are too dirty to swim in. We want to clean them up. And green jobs. We want to create 100,000 green jobs, because we don't want to be tied to the technologies and the ideas of the 20th century, like oil and gas exploration. We want to move into the 21st century and create resilient, sustainable jobs that will bring us and our entire country and our children and our grandchildren into the 21st century and give us a sustainable future. We need you to party vote green, and we need you to vote for MMP. MMP is sustainable because it represents the entire community. There may be some things we'd like to tweak, but we can tweak that by voting for MMP and then having a review. So party vote green and vote for MMP. Kia ora.
Shane Gallagher, thank you very much. Now, Joanne Hayes from the National Party.
Kia ora. Ka nui te mihi atu ki a koutou katoa. I'm very pleased to be here tonight, and thank you very much for inviting me to participate. I was born and raised in a farming community, and I'm of Māori and Scots descent. My iwi affiliations include Ngāti Porou, Ngāti Haunui a Paparangi up the Whanganui River, and Rangitāne ki Wairarapa. I became a sole parent when I was 22 years old, raising my eldest son on my own while re-educating myself before meeting and marrying my husband, Pat, who is of French and Irish descent and who currently runs our sheep and beef property in the North Island. Together we raised the boys on the farm, and now they both live in Timaru. I graduated from Massey University in 1996 with a Bachelor of Science degree, then returned in 2007 to start studying towards a Master's in Business Administration, and I have only two papers left to complete. I've worked in a number of industries that began in an engineering firm as an arc and gas welder, and the last 18 years has seen me working in industries within the education sector, as a training within the fishing industry, manager of Iwi Mātauranga Māori organisation, and a school board of trustees member. I've worked in local government and community and youth development. I've worked in health in all three provider types, NGOs, non-government organisations, district health boards, and I've done a stint in the Ministry of Health as well. I've also worked in the social service area, which has included working in the prisons and employment brokerage. In each of these sectors, I have built new businesses and programs, re-established and invigorated old businesses or existing programs. I've written policy that became government policy, but most importantly, ladies and gentlemen, I've represented and given voice to those communities at government level, and I can do this for you. So, sustainability. To me, sustainability, it traverses all sectors within our community. Because I'm new to Dunedin South, I bring a pair of fresh eyes to what I'm looking at. Tonight I have heard from our colleagues sitting at the table that it has low socioeconomic in South Dunedin, but it also has a, high, a higher socioeconomic out in the rural communities as well. It is the most interesting place that I have ever come to, because on two hills we have a higher income families down on the flat, lower income, then we're out into the rural communities, which we have mixed. We have heard tonight about inequalities. Well, ladies and gentlemen, look at me. I am Māori. I am a woman. Theoretically, I should be on the bottom of the inequalities heap, but I'm not, because I've determined not to be there, and I have determined that I am there to help other people to do the things that I have done in their own way. As I said before, sustainability, it traverses all areas, but it is underpinned by an efficient economy. Yes, I'm looking at sustainable jobs in South Dunedin and Dunedin South the electorate. I believe if we gain sustainable jobs, then we will gain sustainable income. Sustainable housing. National Party has been part and parcel in partnership with the Greens for the insulation program. And to date, the Otago area has benefited by over 4,500 homes that have gained insulation, of which over 50% of those were to families and low income. Within the public service area within health, we have taken money from out of the back office and taken it forward into the frontline services, so people within our community can get access to good quality health services. Within the environment, within the sustainable environment, we have worked under our water quality plan, which gives a framework to local councils on how they can manage the quality and quantity of water within their boundaries. We have also put together a monitoring tool to monitor quality water quality within the rivers and lakes and streams, and we have also put funding in for cleaning up rivers and streams. Within the sustainable economy, we continue to work with farmers to make sure that we can grow that economy, because it is the farming sector, the agriculture sector, that is actually the biggest earner within this country. And so we must ensure that that particular part of our economy remains sustainable throughout our time. And last of all, ladies and gentlemen, if we have all of these things all lined up, all these sustainability initiatives, we will grow a sustainable community. Thank you.
And now I'd like to hear from Warren Voigt from New Zealand Democrats.
Good evening. My name is Warren, and I was born and raised and have worked all my life in Dunedin. Initially, I grew up in Fairfield and then moved into South Dunedin, where I went to King's High School, so I'm a real local boy, and worked in the clerical side of New Zealand Rail during the restructuring and was made redundant post-Roger Economics. So I don't really have a lot of time, having experienced that, for the likes of Roger Douglas and co. I have since then worked in various occupations for myself and in other employment. I was at one stage a solo father of two and went on eventually to qualify as a deep tissue massage and bone therapist, and have operated a practice from the Gardens Health for the past 11 years. I am therefore well acquainted with the socio-economic and environmental issues peculiar to South Dunedin. This is my first foray into politics, and up to this year I have been politically dormant, you might say, for at least the last 20 years. However, I still continue to support the Democrats for Social Credit Party. as I have done since first listening to Bruce Beetham in his opening address in the 1978 general election. I thought that what he said made good sense, and that still holds true today, more so than ever, in light of the economic mess we now find ourselves in. So what do I see are the sustainability challenges facing South Dunedin? Well, I don't pretend to be an environmentalist for a start, although I do have some ideas and have promoted them at council discussion level. For instance, we need to invest in waste technologies in order to have a twofold benefit of reducing reliance on landfill and fossil fuels and developing alternative energy sources. But I will save those ideas for another time. What I do know is that we currently have an unsustainable level of personal and sovereign debt as a country, with a burgeoning ageing population nearing retirement, and that, coupled with a loss of our skill base and a lack of real job opportunity, is creating major health and sociological issues such as youth unemployment and poverty, creating a growing underclass in what was a much more egalitarian society when I was growing up. The idea that we can somehow borrow and hope things will improve is ludicrous, not to mention risky. Placing our future and assets in the hands of overseas companies who have no real interest in anything but their profit margin is a recipe for disaster. Therefore, we need to look within our borders for some answers by using the resources we already own instead of selling them. The first step is to use the Reserve Bank credit lines for debt restructuring. For instance, a case in point is the submission to the local borrowing bill. And I'll just refer to that if I might. Is an indication of how much we're spending on borrowing at local council level. In its 10-year plan 2009, the Kapiti Coast District Council allocates $20.4 million for interest repayments, but only $13.2 million in principal. And there are plenty of other examples of that. And what it's in fact saying is that as long as we're paying off debt at that rate, we're just paying interest more than anything else. And it's really a never-ending story, because the likelihood of us actually addressing the real issues about the debt is not being addressed. And in the meantime, we just continue to accumulate it. So if that same debt was turned around and funded directly through the Reserve Bank, the savings immediately that would be created would result in a net reduction in rates, because there'd be no interest attached to it. So the principal is repaid and the interest is taken care of. And so the repayments will then go directly back to the Reserve Bank. And the Reserve Bank is New Zealand's bank. We can still use it. We would therefore have greater liquidity in the areas which have particular benefits in areas of average to low income, such as South Dunedin. The percentage benefit to this area would be of enormous increase in benefit to the economy and the community as a whole. Other health and education issues related to low income are more easily addressed when liquidity is restored in a sustainable way. And that is the basis for what I believe, and what the Democrats for Social Credit believe, is what we should be addressing before we try and tackle anything else. Because unless you get the housekeeping right with the economy, and I've waited to see anybody else come up with anything in the last 33 years that remotely approaches that, we just lurch from one lack of answer to another between major parties. So until we get to that point where we actually take the bull by the horns and use the resources we have in New Zealand, I don't believe we will go forward. We'll just continue to stay in one place, or it will even get worse. So I'm asking for you to give two ticks and vote for the party and for me, for Dunedin South, because I do think we do have some serious answers. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Warren. We're now going to go to a short musical break, and when we come back, we'll be having a more of a discussion about some of the themes that we've found important on Sustainable Lens on Radio.
Colour for Day.
listening to the Sustainable Lens On Radio Election Special, broadcast live on Otago Access Radio 105.4 FM, and from the Otago Polytechnic. Today we've got the candidates for the Dunedin South electorate here to talk about their views on sustainability. I'd like to pass on to Sam now to introduce some of the sustainability themes we've been discussing on our show over the last year and get the discussion started.
Thank you, Anton. We're hoping here for a discussion. So I'm going to have to start it by asking somebody a question. The intention is that it will flow into a discussion. So I'm hoping that the candidates will have a polite and interesting discussion about these things. When we were looking at the topics that we wanted to talk about, we started by saying, well, the first one's going to be economic and the second one's going to be environment and the third. And then we looked at that and said, hang on, that's missing the point, that sustainability is something about all those things together. And then we decided that was an interesting topic for the first thing we want to talk about. And I'll start, I think, with Claire, who described it as not being a balance. Could you just tell us a bit more about that?
Well, because I think that's code for a trade-off. And I think by saying that you've got to weigh up the effects of whether you... It's like saying that we can't buy and build trains inside in Dunedin and in New Zealand, and instead we'll go for the lowest cost option and get them built overseas. Now, to me, that's not sustainable, and that it should actually have been looking at a holistic approach to the issue is why you need to consider very strongly building those trains inside our economy rather than going offshore and doing it, and that the lowest cost option was the, I guess, short-term approach to an economic issue, whereas building them inside our economy was sustainable. So that's what I mean, is it's more holistic approach to environmental and economic issues in their widest sense.
Raises an interesting issue. It's probably worthwhile doing a quick round from all four candidates. Would you have intervened in the train decision about not building or not the decision not to build them at Hillside? Claire?
Well, yes, we would have, in the sense that we certainly would have required the ability of KiwiRail and the Hillside workshops to be able to properly bid for them and to take account of the economic flow-on effect to the economy in that bid, and had it as a much more transparent process. So the short answer is yes, absolutely. And if they could demonstrate that they could do it affordably, then I'm pretty sure that they would have got that work.
Yep. Warren?
Well, I don't believe, and I was actively against any idea of farming out that sort of work to basically substandard Chinese production. I already knew of instances where those very carriages were known to be defective not long after they came into the country. So, you know, it's a false economy, not to mention the fact that, you know, you've got a resource and a facility such as Hillside, which has had historical value through the years, and I, having worked for the railways, know that only too well. The people seem to know the cost of everything and the value of nothing, and I really believe that what we need to do is seriously look at, okay, how New Zealand, because if we don't do that, then what we're doing is we're going to wind up in the situation that exists in the UK, and I believe Shane might have a comment on this, where they have lost their engineering skills base over the years through the very same ideas of farming the work out. And so I really can't see that farming out to, because of trade deals, which are not to our advantage usually, is going to be a big benefit to our society and our economy as a whole. Therefore, I don't believe that is sustainable.
Jo?
Oh, thank you. Now, to do with the Hillside workshop, workshops that Claire was talking about, and about the Chinese company gaining the contract. The government, it was a fair tendering process. To have government interfere with that is not the way that it should have happened. And this is all part and parcel of, we have a free trade agreement with China, and also there was a issue around how much it would actually cost for, like, if we decided to make everything inside of New Zealand, then what cost would that be to the consumer to purchase some of those consumer goods that could be made? So by doing that, you would start to set some sort of precedence. But as I understand it, it was a tendering process.
Well, first, can I just interject there to say that it was not a fair tendering process. It was not a transparent tendering process, and we are yet to see the costs of what the actual costs were that were provided by the Chinese as opposed to the local KiwiRail providers. And to say that we've got a free trade agreement with China, well, it works both ways. And all of our major trading partners have got internal procurement policies where they actually put a weighting on building stuff within their local economy. So there's no reason why we can't too. And yes, the government could have expressed clearly a desire to KiwiRail, of which it is the shareholder of, and said these are our expectations of the kind of contracts that we want you to undertake. And they could have said, as much as possible, doing it within our own economy is important.
Shane?
Yes, we would have intervened and we would have made sure that trains were built here in New Zealand. One of the things that was brought up was the idea that the free trade agreement would prevent us from building them locally, and that's simply not true. As Claire said, we should have local procurement policies in place, and we could easily have had those trains built here. And had we not the skill sets, well, we're an immigrant country, so we could import the skill sets. There happens to be an international recession on, and there's a lot of engineers floating around, and we could have simply imported them to here. One of the things about sustainability is building skill sets and resilience. We're about to move into a period of unprecedented change in the world economy. We're facing unprecedented challenges, and in order to face those in a resilient manner, we need as many skills and as much ability in this country, and we need to develop those. And you don't develop them by exporting our jobs overseas to Spain and China. What you do is you develop those jobs here. There was a chap at the railway meeting when we were trying to save the jobs at Hillside, and he was, I think, in his late 80s, and he was an engineer. And he was a tradesman, and he was an apprentice at Hillside. And all through his life, he'd worked all over the country in hospitals, on ships, in government buildings. Everywhere he worked, he met other Hillside apprentices who had trained in levels of excellence in engineering, and who then went on and helped build and keep maintaining this country. And that's the kind of skill sets that we need. And this should have been seen not as a cost to the country, but as an opportunity to develop skills, to build jobs, to build a community, to save the engineering sector of Dunedin, because South Dunedin needs its engineering sector. And we need sustainable jobs, and we need a sustainable public transport, which is what railways are. Thank you.
Just to broaden this out a little bit, we're talking about fair trade agreements. They bring us into a global system, and sustainability has a global purview. I'm wondering whether making sure that people in China have good paying jobs is important as well, and that we need to diversify within what we do. Joanne, how would you react to that?
Actually, I was in China a couple of years ago, and saw some of the work that some of the Chinese people do, from all ranges actually, and that's, you know, from the highly skilled right through to those who have left their farms and gone into, moved into the city and have gained work there. I agree that, yeah, they should. I can't comment on what the how the Chinese government works with payments for their people, but their culture is very different to ours. But what I want to touch on is Shane mentioned about the Greens importing skills to actually to engineering skills to take the place of those that have been left to make the trains. And I would have thought that actually would have flown in the face of what Claire was just saying about maintaining the skills within Dunedin South within the engineering field. So I just thought that it just seemed a little bit kind of...
Just to clarify, I meant that if we didn't have the skill sets to develop the electric motors, the electric engines, and we possibly may have a bit of a gap there that we can import those engineers and skills. We don't need to replace anyone. We've got really good engineers here, but we're a small country. We may have gaps there and we could easily get those people in. Mm. We don't have to export that over. We don't have to use that as an excuse to send the jobs overseas.
Mm. I don't see how the idea of somehow or other assisting China, I don't think China needs assistance. We're the country that needs assistance. We're the one that's gone to being an economic cot case due to, you know, policies that really have taken us close to being on a, well, let's just say we're running out of first world status if things carry on the way that they are. I think charity begins at home. We need to look after our own people, develop our own jobs, and as I said before, look within our own borders. Look, we've developed so many things as a country. You know, we're world leaders in so many areas. Why look outside, you know? Don't leave town till you've seen the country. We've got it all here. All we've got to do is set our minds to it. We conquered Everest. I think we can do a few more things as well as that, can't we?
Can I just say that it's not an either-or situation, really. That we certainly must put the sustainability of our own local economy first, and we need in this town a plan to take us forward and to know where the jobs of the future are going to come from, and that they're going to be jobs that actually pay a decent income. They won't just be in the traditional engineering, rail engineering sphere. They need to be in new technology and using our brains and innovation and investing in that. And as a country, and Labor does have a pretty solid plan in place for that. But it's not. We also have to take account of our place in the world and how we fit and how we can use as much as possible our leverage. Even though we're a little country, we are pretty well respected in the world for our foreign affairs policy and for our approach to relationships and trade agreements, etc. To put stakes in the ground around negotiating around labour laws and rights and conditions and around human rights, and those things are really important. And every time a Labor government has initiated any kind of trade agreement, we have put on the table up front human rights and labour laws as being conditions for how we will negotiate going forward. Now, that is really important, and we must continue to do that, and not just in trade agreements, but in any relationships that we're having with other countries. And China is certainly one of those where we are continuing to put that kind of pressure on.
Are there some sectors of the economy that we should walk away from?
In what sense?
That they're not doing either the environment any good, or that they are, you know, things that are past their prime?
Oh, I think you're alluding to perhaps one of the things that is right in front of our faces at the moment, off the coast of Tauranga, with deep sea oil drilling and its potential effects, and I'm happy to discuss that, because I certainly think we have to have, as a community, we have to be reassured that there are safeguards in place before there's any moves in that direction in the future. And I'm pretty strong on that personally, and I know that my party is too, and we've got an unfolding tragedy happening before our eyes that we must ensure, if there's ever going to be any oil drilling off the coast of New Zealand, that we do have proper plans in place, because we don't have them now.
Well, you know, the Green stance is that we need to walk away from this. There's simply no way that you can stop a leak 3 kilometres down under the Pacific Ocean. We don't have the technology. We know more about outer space than we know about the environment 3 kilometres down. We've seen with ARENA how badly provisioned we are in to deal with a very, very small oil leak from a ship in shallow water, and the oil is in tanks, and we can barely cope with it. How are we going to cope with something of the scale of the Deepwater Horizon when the United States, which is the greatest economy on Earth, struggled for months to deal with that problem? And that was in the Gulf of Mexico, which is not the Southern Pacific Ocean. The idea that we would put at risk our entire coastline and a fishing industry that is vital to our economy and our environment, our beaches, the places we swim in, the places we go on a sunny day where we spend with our children, or we go to for Christmas picnics, that we sacrifice all that for what? A few dollars. When it's a 20th century technology, we need to move away. Even not even taking into account the fact that we've got climate change. This is a 20th century technology. We need to move away. We need to start moving and looking towards the future, to the 21st century, not looking back to the past.
Mm. I find the comments so far to be quite short-sighted. 1 minute, my colleagues are saying we need to build and grow the technical skills here in New Zealand, and then the next minute they're saying we don't have them. So I think that deep sea oil drilling is one of the areas that our party is going towards, because it will add to our economy. It will also add to employment opportunities in South Dunedin, or Dunedin South, Dunedin overall. It gives an opportunity for those people that will be working on those rigs to grow in that technology. New Zealand is renowned for being leaders in niche markets of technology. We make the sleep apnea machines here in Dunedin. We have the technology, and I think that to wipe it all out altogether is something that we shouldn't be contemplating just like that. I think the ARENA affair, it was a container ship, and we didn't have the technology, because yes, we don't have an oil industry, and perhaps if we did have an oil industry, then we would have the technology for cleanups like that. And I've heard what Shana said about deep sea drilling and the leaks way under, and what the United States have had to cope with. But at the end of the day, this country, it's going to be a long time before the people of this country decide to get out of their cars and walk places. So they are still going to be reliant on oil that is going to come out of oil wells.
The way that that I hear Joanne talking is as if the ARENA issue is over. It isn't. It's ongoing. It's before our faces. There's a lot of oil in that ship still to be got off. We don't know if it will get off. It's an unfolding tragedy that has happened off the coast of New Zealand that has demonstrated that we do not have in place environmental a strategy and capacity to deal with it. Unless we can, we shouldn't go ahead and have the industry developed further. So I guess what that says, there is a bit of a difference between Labor and the Greens on this, and that is we're not saying no to it. We're saying, could we ensure that we've got the strategy in place? We don't have it now. We've seen in the last 3 years how it's gone backwards. We've gone backwards. There was work to be done. There was a fairly substantial coastal report that had been produced at the end of the last government, which was trying to address a whole lot of these issues. But we've gone backwards at a rate of knots, and we've seen demonstrated the effect of that, and it could get worse.
I'd like to, if I may, tie together three things. One is the problem that's just been talked about. Some see it as a benefit and some see it as a problem in having oil exploration, and who knows what might come of that. I certainly wouldn't want to comment that I think it'll go ahead or it won't. Another issue I believe that that can be woven into these three parts I'm going to speak about is that we have a dairy industry which is currently running at a 4-to-1 over capacity. In other words, there should be two and a half beasts, I don't know how they do that, per hectare. I suppose it's like 1.5 children, and currently we're running at about 8. Now that clearly is not sustainable, and even although New Zealand takes a great deal of income from the dairy industry, and we can't deny that, and we depend on it to a great deal, perhaps if we were to invest a bit more in technology and the like of seeing what the viability was for instead of running dairy produce in a world that's screaming out for fuel, then we might look at something like rapeseed development or things like that. I don't know. I mean, it's just an idea. But I think you've got to start looking for the solutions rather than the problems. You can concentrate on the problems till the cows come home and they may not arrive. So I think, you know, we've just got to do a bit of lateral thinking, and we might be able to have those solutions coming, and they might be simpler than what we could possibly imagine.
Can I return to the question that I started with? Because I would like to get back to what an understanding of what people's, you know, model is of the relationships between the environment and the economy. We heard from Claire that it's not a balance. Shane, do you have a way of describing that relationship?
Well, it's not a balance. There is no economy without an environment. And if you look at what we can imagine, is a strong sustainability model, and this is one of the cores of the Green belief, is that the environment, if you can imagine a circle, is the biggest circle. We live in the environment. Without the environment, without the trees to produce clean water and oxygen for us, we can't drink and we can't breathe. We need plants, fertile soils to produce foods for us. So if we somehow believe that we can trade off destroying our environment in order to get some sort of economic gain, and that's just, it's quite frankly insanity. The environment is paramount. The needs of the environment is paramount. The needs of society comes next, and then the needs of the economy. And I think for a lot of right-wing parties, they've got this completely the wrong way around. The economy for them is paramount. Society serves the economy, and the environment can be destroyed in the service and the needs of the economy. It's completely the wrong way around, and it's completely wrong-headed. So for us, the idea is that the environment is the biggest thing, and the economy must serve the interests of society, and society must look after the environment because it looks after us.
Why should we had on the show earlier in the year, we had Phil Bishop talking about frogs.
Mm-hmm.
Why should we care about a frog that's of no likely economic benefit, or a worm with legs in the way of a motorway?
Well, because those creatures have an absolute moral right to exist. I mean, we don't have the moral or ethical right to determine whether that species exists or not. The idea that we own the world and that we somehow can destroy at will any species that kind of is a mild inconvenience to us is antithetical to everything I believe in and everything the Greens believe in. We can't know what the value of that frog is, or the little worm with his legs. It's a very cute worm, actually, and it's lovely colours. It's purple, and but it's a unique species. I mean, who knows, that worm may have the cure for cancer, but it may not. And it doesn't really matter. That worm has a right to exist, and we simply can't choose to destroy it.
Joanne, same question for you, not the worm question. All the frogs. What's your understanding of the relationship between the environment and the economy?
Well, I agree. It isn't in balance. And I think a lot of it around the reason that it isn't in balance has to do with the needs of the human race. And the more that we want from our lives and our lifestyles, that is where the economy tries to actually cater for that. And I agree, there does need to be some balance there with the environment. And so therefore, we've got our policy out on the environment. When Shane talks about the little frog and the little worm, it has a right to exist, and then if the little frog or the little worm has some sort of cancer-curing thing inside it, enzyme inside it, then we knock the little frog off so we can live. And that's where it's all at the end of the day, is we humans want to live, and we want to have an economy that will allow us to do that. And at times, every single one of us is responsible for some sort of something that will go wrong in our environment and our pursuit to live and be successful.
Well, I think I fundamentally disagree with that. There's no doubt that the human species has made a huge impact on our world, and those of us who are in the mindset of recognising that and knowing that we have to try and redress that in order for us to be able to continue to coexist in an environment with other species is really important. But the human species is just one species, and we have an ecosystem, and that frog and that worm are a part of it, and they're as much an important part of it as the human species, really. So I scratch my head when I think to myself, how do people think that the human species is so important that it has the right to go and destroy other species? And until we actually can change our attitudes on that, then I don't know where we're headed. And there's a short-termism to this and a long-term. And I suppose Labor is in a policy sense, is trying to take a much longer term approach on a whole lot of policy issues around our ageing population, around the measures we have to put in place to ensure that we've got a workforce that can that is adequately trained and paid and put in place to be able to manage that ageing population, to look at inequality and how to address the issues of poverty going forward so that we've got a more equal society which will be a more productive society and a happier society, and a society with less problems. Those are things that we need to be focusing on, and I think that's where we're trying to turn our attention. It involves taking some pretty hard decisions right now, though.
I believe that we're in an age of dawning of a different realisation about where we stand in relation to our world. We've been used, and I've certainly grown up in that traditional, if I might say it, left versus right, socialist versus capitalist kind of argument, which fundamentally has taken us virtually nowhere. And we are left in a position of increasingly going to the point where we are searching for means of survival. Okay. So what we need to do in order to be able to move past that is we need to move into a mindset of creativity. And creativity can only exist in an environment where you don't have the competition. You have to have cohesion. You have to have cooperation. And those are the things that I keep missing when I'm listening to these conversations. And that's why I'm with who I'm with, because when we're talking, we don't seem to have those sort of issues. Because we're all of one mind And I think that we need to reassess where we stand politically and ask ourselves. And I do know there was Dame Anne Salmon was on an interview with Darren E. Shanahan on Beatson just a couple of nights ago. And what she said was that the young people today are becoming disillusioned with the left-right argument. They are increasingly seeing it as irrelevant. Well, I don't know a lot about Dame Anne Salmon, but from what I understand, she's a very knowledgeable woman on these matters. And so I take notice of those comments. And so what I believe is that, that being the case, then maybe things, you know, we will move into that more cooperative approach. Maybe we will become creative. I believe that we can find the answers, but I believe that we need to change our thinking in order to start realistically finding those answers. The old models are not working. They simply aren't. 1,600 encampments around the world of the Occupy movement, they don't say everything. They don't have the answers. What they do say is, this isn't working, it's not right, it's not serving anything. So fundamentally, I believe...
Can I ask all four of you if anyone has been down to the Octagon and talked to the people camping in the Octagon?
Not yet.
I have.
Yes, I took them some fruit and water.
I haven't yet. I'm planning to get down there.
Okay. Does anybody understand what they want?
To be honest, I don't know whether there's been a fully articulated sort of manifesto from the Occupy movement about exactly what it wants. I certainly think that where they've touched a lot of people is that they want things to change, and that they can articulate a whole lot of things that are wrong. And I think that what they're saying is that there's a lot of merit behind it, but the solutions are really tough right across the world as to how and what should change and could change. But I certainly think that we've seen through the huge amount of financial collapse that's happened in recent years across the world, that the impact on people's lives, that the growing inequalities and that, I suppose, the concentration of wealth in the hands of very few is what lies behind it. And that's why so many people are kind of listening and watching with interest.
I think that the Occupy movement isn't really about a solid demands at this stage, but what you need to look at is the method they're using. And and this has been inspired, I think, by the Greek protests. They have gone back to the fundamental concepts behind participatory democracy. Speakers are chosen by, at the Greek protests, speakers are chosen by lot. They get 2 minutes. So the professor and the street cleaner and the banker or whoever's there wanting to speak has the same amount of time, the same chance of speaking, and everyone is listened to with respect. And that's really, I think, what the essence of this is participatory democracy. This is a different way of being and of participating in society. And I think that's really the core message that we can take from the Occupy movements and from the movements all around the world, because this is exactly what they're doing. It's about participatory democracy and a new way of doing things. It's not the message, it's the way they're talking about it.
Can I just go through? I don't think we need to go through and get yeses from everyone, but let's go for it. Does anybody not agree that climate change is happening?